Welcome to Spectrum from China America Radio, a weekly public service production featuring news, information, and stories of interest to our China America Radio listeners in the United States and around the world. Now, here's this week's host, Steve Warren.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again. It's another Spectrum program, and we have a repeat guest. Of course, over the years, we've had a number of folks that doubled back as our guests on the program, not least of which is Yayun Ting. Yayun is with Flushing Town Hall, and they have a full range of all kinds of activities that go on there. So, Yayun, welcome back to China America Radio.
Thank you, Steve, for having me and all the guests here.
Now, obviously, Flushing Town Hall is pretty famous for its live events, and that has changed geometrically with what's going on in the world. Tell us a little bit about how Flushing Town Hall has morphed into more of a virtual place for things to happen.
Sure. I mean, since March, we have been working to move our program online. So we have a series of online programming called Flushing Town Hall at Home. It's on our website. And for this fall, we decide that we're going to focus on storytelling. And I think a lot of you guys know that my job is to outreach to the Chinese and Asian community for the organization and work with the community to develop a program that's relevant to the community. So we decide to focus on storytelling, highlighting Asian American experience this fall. So upcoming, we have a hand-in-hand storytelling through shadow theater series by Speak Wabi and also Lucky 88, the Food Court musical by Marcus E, commissioned by Queen's Council on the Arts, upcoming later this month. And so, yeah, we are just really happy that, you know, there's a platform for the artwork.
Very good. Well, you brought along some guests with you on this week's program. Would you like to introduce who they are and what their affiliation is with the events upcoming?
So over here, we have a speaker, Wabi, who is the artist for Hand in Hand Storytelling through Shadow Theater. And it's a series of program which will continue for 3 weeks. First session will take place on September 30th, and following with the second session, which is October 7th and October 13th. And the same series also we offer in Mandarin version. So the first Mandarin version will take place on October 1st, October 8th, and October 15th. And also here we have Marcus E., the artist for Lucky 88 Food Court Musical, and also Kelly Ocean, the program manager for Artist Commissioning Program at Queen's Council on the Arts. They are an important partner with Flushing Town Hall for Marcus Project. Without them, we won't have this great work.
Well, I'd like to welcome Marcus. Nice to meet you, and welcome to China America Radio.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having us.
Good. I'm interested in your program, your production. We'll get around to you in just a bit. And Kelly, you're the person that kind of ties everything together. Has it been an interesting challenge to get all of these things together and get them in front of people?
Absolutely. In the art sector, we're all reimagining what it means to showcase events, particularly in the performing arts right now. And I've just been really impressed by the artists' creativity and flexibility in this moment. Marcus has transitioned what would typically be a stage musical to the virtual setting, and just grateful for that work and as excited as anyone else to see how that reads in the digital sphere.
Well, as a little tease, Marcus has written a production that actually takes place in a Chinese food hall called Lucky 88, and that's going to pique everybody's curiosity. Let's start with Spica and the shadow puppetry world, because that's probably the oldest of the art forms that we're dealing with at this point. What was your interest in presenting shadow theater?
Well, I keep telling people, you know, since, you know, thousands of years, you know, cavemen already playing on fire and use the hand with the fire to play hand shadow on the in the cave. So it's a long tradition, and it never goes away. So right now, since you know, all the kids stuck at home and adults stuck at home too, you know, always try to find things to do. I think it's such a wonderful way. We just go back to the very beginning. As long as you have light, then you can play it. You can use your body, you can use an object, and you can create something, and you can tell stories. So I started to interested in shadow puppetry actually after I moved to New York in year 2000. And I work with a company called Chinese Theater Works, and they purely doing shadow, mostly doing shadow puppetry and Beijing opera. So I learned a lot of shadow puppetry on overhead projector with them, actually. And then after that, I said, oh, what a wonderful art form, like so interesting. So after that, then I went to Indonesia for months. I just want to learn more about shadow puppetry. And that's another place that has long tradition of shadow puppetry. And they are still doing it, a very big art form there. So I learned a lot. And then I came back and I established my theater company called Double Image Theater Lab. And then we use all kinds of puppets, but mostly using shadows, because I think shadows are so so powerful, and it's everywhere. It's basically with you all the time, as long as you have light, you can see it. So I think what a wonderful way to tell story with this art form.
So you're actually teaching the viewers how to do everything, how to act with the puppets, how to make them, how to light them.
Yeah, definitely. I think I tell people everyone has a puppetry part of in their heart. Everybody likes to play, like to bring things to life in different situation. Like when you see, like when you play with baby, that's the most direct example. You take something, you play with, then you bring it to life, and that's puppetry. So you can use object, but you can use shadow as well.
Very good. Well, we'll come back to you in just a bit, Marcus. Let's turn to you now. Let's go from the world of puppets to the world of real live people, real live actors and performers. Let's get to know you a little better. What's your background? Where's your family from, and how did you get from there to here?
I actually came from Singapore in 2005. I came to the United States to study musical theater. That was my undergrad degree. And then after that, I moved to New York to pursue a law degree. So I actually went to St. John's Law School. And that's when I lived in the southern part of Flushing. And then years later, I became an immigration attorney, which I still am today. And I was working at the Flushing Immigration Center on Prince Street. And I've always had a really strong connection with Flushing in terms of going there, meeting the people, eating its food. And I found that the place was very reinvigorating. It really brought back a lot of memories for me. So when it was time to like sort of create this piece, I've always wanted to write a musical set in like a food court. I just wasn't sure what kind of food court. When I saw the call for the ACP program, I knew immediately I had to like write something about Flushing food courts. And that's how this whole thing started. I started writing the show in January of this year. And I've just been sort of plowing through writing the book, writing the music. And now we're going to produce like a full stage reading of it in partnership with Flushing Town Hall.
How did you pick the food selections that represent the stands that you are using in Lucky 88? Just your favorite food?
I think I was really inspired by specific stalls that I would frequent a lot of times. There used to be like a food court that was right opposite Asian Jewels. It used to be like a mall there, and in the basement was like a food court. But then since then, the whole building has been torn down, and there was a dumpling stall there, there was a hand-pulled noodle stall there, and there was a boba stall there. So those stalls really stayed with me. So I really wanted to feature stories about those stalls and the families and the people that work there and their lives. That's why I was really inspired in choosing that particular types of food and that particular types of stalls.
Do you still have inclinations toward wanting to do this as a live theatrical production?
Absolutely. I originally envisioned it as a more immersive kind of production where we were going to turn the whole of Flushing Town Hall into like a fake food court where people could go and buy food, maybe get some dumplings during intermission, go get some boba during intermission, so that's like a really more of like a live immersive experience. And I definitely am interested in bringing that to life once this whole pandemic is over.
How about the music? What's your music background, and how much of the show is engaged with music?
There are 19 songs, so it's a fully like, you know, book musical. There's like scenes, it goes into the songs and stuff like that. Musically, it's funny because I didn't actually start learning how to write music until I went to law school, because I was really, really sad and I didn't have any kind of creative outlet. So I found a music teacher in Regal Park, and he taught me like chord theory. And from there, I just sort of started writing my own music. And I always loved musical theater. And once I discovered how to be able to do that, I started, you know, creating my own shows. For me, for this particular musical, I was very inspired by like the music that you can find in Flushing itself. So things like Mandarin pop, Korean pop, and also things that people in the Flushing area would have listened to on the radio, so that or even in their past lives in like China or something like that. So it ranges from things like rap to hip hop to Broadway jazz to Mandarin pop to more ancient Chinese styles like kuaipan, which is like a form of Chinese rap, and you know, other types of like more, you know, music that you might hear during like a Lunar New Year celebration or, and stuff like that. So I took all these different disparate styles and sort of like meshed them all into like one musical to sort of give the musical vocabulary of the entire world.
Kelly, what's your capacity in terms of bringing all of this together? Tell us your background a little bit and how you got engaged with this particular project.
My background is in the visual arts, actually, and then I moved to New York to study arts management at Columbia and really fell in love with artist services and the importance of supporting individual artists in this field through financial resources and professional development. And so I have the privilege of running the Artist Commissioning Program, which aims to democratize which projects are commissioned and showcased as added as part of American culture. And that's how I know Yayoung and Marcus, and that we tasked a cohort, a panel of local community members from Queens to select which artist should receive $10,000 commissions. And so Yayoung was one of our art commissioners this year that selected Marcus's project. And it's funny, it's a small world in that, you know, Spica was mentioning the Chinese Theater Works, and their executive and co-artistic director, Kwang Yung Fong, was actually art commissioner with us in the first inaugural year of the Artist Commissioning Program a couple of years back.
So Yayoung, back to you, back to square one. Kind of give us the calendar. This is mostly, these events are going to happen during October, correct?
Yes, yeah. So as I said, Speak's project is going to be a series, and we're doing in two languages, English version and Mandarin version. So the first session is going to take place during the week of Mid-Autumn Moon Festival, which is a very important traditional holiday in Asian community. So that week, we will have Speak's first session, and then that weekend, October 4th, we will have Marcus's play reading at 2:00 on Sunday.
The schedule for all of the events is very clearly spelled out on the FlushingTownHall.org website. It's got all the dates and times in which for Speak's event is Mandarin, which is English.
Yeah, just go to our website, and audience would need to register with us so that you can get the watch link for Marcus's show.
So Marcus, after your show gets launched and is on the boards, what's next for you? You going to stay on the theater side of things, or keep practicing law, or try to do a musical about a lawyer from Singapore?
I think I might just do all three. I love practicing law. I also love writing musical theater. It just goes back and forth for me. When I get bored with law, I go work on a song or two or something like that. And when I get tired of like the arts world, I go work on a legal case. And it sort of like just balances me up. I'm probably just going to keep writing for the duration of the pandemic. Producing things during this time is very time consuming and very stressful, because it's so dependent on so many other factors and so many other actors and so many other like technological issues that come up, that it's really difficult to like really produce like a live performance or even any kind of performance really. So I think for the duration of the pandemic, I'm just going to go back to writing and start creating work, so that once this is over, I'm just going to start, you know, creating and producing things in real life.
And Kelly, finally, I mean, supporting the arts is problematic in the best of times. How has this transition to a lot of things that are now virtual rather than tactile?
That's a really great question that's on a lot of arts organizations' minds. I think that one of our art commissioners put it best, in that rather than trying to take what we typically always did in a pre-COVID era, to take something that was initially intended to be a world premiere, one night only stage event, and then retrofit it to the digital sphere, doesn't work. That you really have to design things for the digital space from the beginning, so that you're leaning into that format. And again, that just comes back to the artist's ingenuity and creativity. And so there is a hunger for content right now, and that people are yearning for a sense of connectedness, for community, for something to act as a cultural respite during this very difficult time. And so there is a desire for this content, and it's the onus is on us as arts managers or as cultural workers to still keep the wheels turning and provide that sense of culture and connectedness, not just for the artists, but for audience members, art lovers, and the larger community.
Well, I totally agree, because I'm sure everybody that we all know has some degree of screen fatigue these days. And most of the entertainment that's available is pretty much prepackaged. So it's kind of refreshing to see something that's one-off and unique. And so for that, we appreciate all of your contributions. Thank all of you again for coming on China America Radio. Any last words from each of you? And if you have a website for your project or your show.
For Marcus's event, and to learn more about his project and our other Queens Council on the Arts Commission artists, you can go to queenscouncilarts.org.
That's got it. That covers it. Thank you all so much for being with us. I want everybody to have a great October, and don't forget Halloween as at the end of the month. Thank you all very much for joining us. Goodbye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Listen again next Sunday at 10 o'clock a.m. Eastern for another edition of Spectrum. To hear previously broadcast editions of Spectrum, visit the Spectrum tab on our website to listen or download your favorite past programs. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Spectrum. Now, back to the music on China America Radio.